with you here this morning, if you can take it and turn to the book of John, chapter 13. We'll be looking at verses 13 through 38, and then we're also going to be looking at John chapter 18. So if you want to put your finger there as well, you can do that. We have been looking through the sermon series about what it means to be a disciple and looking through the life of Peter. And the events surrounding the crucifixion completely change Peter. Jesus had been preparing his disciples for this event. He had been investing in them. He had been investing in Peter. But when the time came for Peter to come and yield himself totally to God, he was unprepared. Here he becomes a broken man. And Peter had become broken to be used by God. So we're going to look today at the events that led up to his brokenness. In the next sermon, we're going to look at the restoration, the amazing restoration that comes that enables him to be the man who leads the early church. There comes in our time in our lives when we have to fully yield ourselves to God. And sometimes that requires us to be broken to ourselves. In my life as a young man, I wandered for years completely without direction or purpose. My life was one bad decision after another. I moved and I changed jobs and broke relationships trying to find some kind of purpose. Then God broke me. My life was a mess. I was disobedient in my faith. I had neglected and maybe even at times rejected God in my life. I was a believer, but my life was a wreck. When I hit bottom, God was there. I thought I knew what I was doing. I thought I had all the answers. I thought I was prepared for life, but found out that I had no clue. Peter comes to a point of great struggle. The signs of that struggle were there, even as he ministers with Jesus. Even as he spends time with Jesus, we see the signs of the struggle. Then perhaps Peter's darkest hour comes. We will look at this passage today that will lead to his brokenness. Each of these events lead to a crossroads in his life. Let's read together John chapter 13, verses 31 through 38. Therefore, when he had gone out, Jesus said, "Now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God is glorified in him, God will also glorify him in him himself, and will glorify him immediately. Little children, I am with you a little while longer. You will seek me, and as I said to the Jews, now I also say to you, where I am going, you cannot come. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this all men will know that you are my disciples, if you have love one for another." Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, where are you going?" Jesus answered, "Where I go, you cannot follow me now, but you will follow me later." Peter said to him, "Lord, why can I not follow you right now? I will lay down my life for you." Jesus answered, "Will you lay down your life for me? Truly, truly, I say to you, a rooster will not crow until you deny me three times." So here's a scene for this passage. They've been in the upper room, and Jesus has just predicted his betrayal. And Judas has left the building. He is gone. And Jesus turns to his disciples here, and he begins to prepare them for his departure. And notice as we read this passage that Peter seems to be missing the point of what Jesus is teaching. Jesus says that his disciples are known by their love. He says the time for his glorification has come, and five times he uses the word glory or glorification. And Jesus is speaking of the cross. Jesus is speaking of his death and his resurrection. He says, "The time of my glorification has come." He's letting the disciples know that the time for my departure is coming. I am getting ready to leave you. Little children, I am only with you a little while longer. And he knows as he's teaching this that his words are difficult. The disciples had followed him, and they expected to remain with him. They had never considered that Jesus would depart. He's been preparing them, but even in preparation, they never expected there'd be a time would come when they'd walk without Jesus. Jesus had been training them to function without his physical presence, and that time is soon coming. That time will come when he will leave them behind, and they will have to fulfill their ministry and do their jobs. Jesus is going away, and where he's going, they can't come. And so he's continuing this preparation. Although he's leaving them physically, the work will continue. And so he says, love. Love is what makes this work possible. Love is what makes it possible for them to fulfill their ministry. So he says, a new commandment I give to you. And the Greek says that you may be loving one another, that they continue to love one another. He says, this is a new commandment. And you're hearing this and you're saying, well, that's not really a new commandment. It was a commandment that was given in Leviticus 19, where it says, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And so the command was not new in time, but the command was new in application. See, Jesus' disciples, they were going to be distinguished by this new commandment. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. This is the distinguishing characteristic for believers, for disciples of Jesus, is their love for another. The world must see our love, and the world will be attracted to believers and attracted to Jesus because the disciples of Jesus love one another. And too often the world sees something that is the exact opposite of this. I've done church work for a long time, and some of you have been in church for a long time, and we've seen this. How often have we seen church members who don't even speak to each other? They'll come in and they'll sit in the same building and they'll sing songs together and they'll hear God's word and they'll leave, but they won't even talk to each other. How often we see church members attacking each other in the community? How often in churches do we see members refusing to be together but talking about each other behind their backs? Jesus tells us that we are to love one another. And he tells us the world is going to recognize the disciples by how we do that. Instead, sometimes in the pretense of defending Jesus, in the pretense of acting godly, we don't show love for each other. Notice in this passage that Peter completely ignores these comments from Jesus. And he goes right back to the subject of Jesus' departure. Jesus just said, I'm leaving and this is what you need to do. And Peter is totally forgetting those words, ignoring those words. And he says, Lord, where are you going? Jesus understands the request, and he says, Peter wants to know, and he wants specific details. He's demanding, he says, Jesus, wherever you're going, I demand to go with you. Jesus refuses the request. He says, you can't follow me. And I bet Peter's thinking, as Jesus was teaching on loving the love part of it, he's thinking, you know, Jesus is going away, and Jesus shouldn't be alone. And Jesus needs some companionship, and Jesus probably needs me to go with him. And I really want to be where Jesus is going to be, and so it's not fair if Jesus leaves without me. And this is probably what's going through his mind as he's listening to Jesus teach about love and ignoring that. And Peter assures Jesus, he says, I'm going to be there for you. See, Peter had some great qualities. He was loyal. He was brave. He was courageous. And he said he was even willing to die for Jesus. I think Peter here is a little insulted that Jesus is not allowing him to go with. He says, Lord, why can't I follow you? I will lay down my life for you. See, Jesus had just told Peter the importance of loving each other. And all Peter can think about is defending Jesus. And this wasn't a new thing for Peter. Peter was against Jesus going to the cross. Peter did not want a suffering servant. He was looking for a conquering king. He did not like the idea at all of Jesus going to the cross. We see this in Matthew 16, in verses 21 through 23. It says, from that time, Jesus began to point out to his disciples that it was necessary for him to go to Jerusalem and to suffer many things from the elders, chief priests, and scribes, and to be killed and be raised up on the third day. And yet Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, God forbid it, Lord. This shall never happen to you. But he turned and said to Peter, get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me, for you are not setting your mind on God's purpose, but men's. So Christ is predicting his suffering, and he's talking about his death and his resurrection. And see Peter. Can you picture Peter hearing this teaching and saying, Jesus, come here for a minute. I need to talk to you. Pulls Jesus aside and says, you're wrong. This is not how it's going to happen. Peter would do anything to change the outcome. See, because in Peter's mind, he knew better than Jesus knew. He had a better plan than Jesus had. How often do we do this? How often do we do this? Jesus tells us to love, But we know what that really means. Jesus says, you're going to go do this, but we know what this really means. This means that I'm going to do that to those who agree with me. That means I'm going to love those who think the same way that I do. I'm going to love those that are easy to love. And we'll do anything we can to defend what we think that Jesus should do. And that's what Peter did. He's defending what he thinks Jesus should do. If that means hurting someone else, well, then so be it. We're defending Jesus. If that means that we misuse Scripture, well, I guess that's okay. And if that means that we post something or say something that's unbiblical, and we couch it in religious terms and it sounds really good, then that's okay because, hey, it fits the cause. We need to stop. We need to stop misusing God's word. We need to stop misusing the name of Jesus. We need to stop misrepresenting who we are as believers to make our political or to deal with our current events. We can't do that. Just stop. Truth and love still means something. Unfortunately, too many times, neither truth nor love prevails in the actions of God's people. When it comes to us thinking that we need to defend Jesus and Jesus needs our defending, and we look at what our interpretations of what he should do and how he should work, and we get confused in this matter. And when we do this, this leads us to missing what God is doing, trying to execute what we think he should do. Let's look at chapter 18, verses 1 through 11, as we continue the events that are happening here. It says, when Jesus had spoken these words, he went forth with his disciples over the ravine of the Kidron, where there was a garden in which he entered with his disciples. Now Judas also, who was betraying him, knew the place, for Jesus had often met there with his disciples. Judas then, having received the Roman cohort and officers from the chief priests and the Pharisees, came there with lanterns and torches and weapons. So Jesus, knowing all the things that were coming upon him, went forth and said to them, whom do you seek? They answered him, Jesus the Nazarene. He said to them, I am he. And Judas also, who was betraying him, was standing with him. So when he had said to them, I am he, they drew back and fell to the ground. Therefore he again asked them, whom do you seek? And they said, Jesus the Nazarene. And Jesus replied, I told you that I am he. So if you seek me, let these go their way. To fulfill the word which he spoke, of those whom you have given me, I lost not one. Simon Peter then, having a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's slave and cut off his right ear, and his slave's name was Malchus. So Jesus said to Peter, put the sword in the sheath. The cup which the Father has given me, shall I not drink of it? The time of the betrayal has come. Judas knew that Jesus and his disciples, he knew they would be spending time in the garden. John tells us that the group had spent a lot of time in the garden. And Luke tells us that every night during the Passion Week, that that's where they had been. And so Judas comes, and he comes with this military contingent, with officers of the chief priests, and he gets a Roman cohort. And the Jewish authorities are demanding to get, are determined to get Jesus, so they bring the Romans with them for help. Depicting Jesus as a dangerous man, portraying the possibility of violence. The Roman soldiers, they come looking for the possibility of a fight or maybe even a riot. And they want to make sure that Jesus doesn't get away. And they want to make sure that Jesus doesn't fight back. The Jewish authorities were clearly thought they were in charge. And they were going to take Jesus into custody. But we see in this event, Jesus, his courage and his submission. Jesus, the one who was in complete control of the entire situation. He knew what was happening. And they asked him, he said, whom are you seeking? And he identifies himself with I am. I am, he said, that's the name I am. It's, that's deity saying, I am God. Who do you seek? He says, I am he. The actions were shocking to the soldiers. They did not expect to encounter a commanding figure who took charge of the situation. See, Jesus was not under arrest in the normal sense of the term. It wasn't like you see on TV where they all come and he takes off running and they go and they tackle Jesus and they arrest him and put him in handcuffs. It wasn't like that. Jesus surrendered himself. Jesus gave himself up. Jesus allowed himself to be captured in this entire event. He was the one who was in control. See, God's plan was not for a physical kingdom. It was for a spiritual kingdom. His death, his burial, his resurrection, they were essential. There will be a time in the future, there will be a time will come when Jesus will reign as king. When Jesus will reign as king and he will set up his kingdom. But that time was not here. That time was not then. He was setting up his spiritual kingdom through the church. And Peter had a different plan. Peter had a different idea. Somehow, as I read this, I'm not real surprised that Peter had a sword. I'm not surprised that Peter was ready to fight. Somehow, I'm not surprised that Peter used the sword. But you notice that his aim was a bit off. Obviously, he was a better fisherman than he was a swordsman, because he wasn't aiming for Malchus's ear. He was aiming for his head. He was going to cut off his head. Instead, he just got his ear. And again, Peter, maybe his motives were good. Maybe he was trying to do what's right. But he was trying to fight a spiritual battle with physical weapons. His loyalty may be something to be admired, but he totally was missing God's plan, because he had his mind set on Jesus being king. And no other idea met into his thoughts. He was ready to go to war and set up the kingdom. Luke tells us that Jesus healed Malchus's ear. He reached down and picked up the ear and put it back on, and he rebukes Peter and he tells him to put away the sword. I have a different purpose. See, Jesus didn't need Peter's sword. Think about that. Jesus had the armies of heaven at his disposal. He could have brought armies of angels. He did not need Peter and Peter's sword. But Jesus says, I cannot escape the cup of shame and suffering and sin. Jesus has to pay the price for our salvation, and Jesus has to pay the penalty for our sin. So let me ask, what kingdom are we fighting for? What kingdom are we fighting for? Are we fighting so that we can see God being king of our land? Are we fighting so that we can see America becomes God's kingdom? Or do we understand that God has called us to be the church? And as the church, we are part of his spiritual kingdom, and we are to build his spiritual kingdom and not his physical kingdom. Do we understand that? Do we understand what our role is and what we're supposed to do? How would we behave differently if we truly understood this? We are his church. We are to point people to the cross, the saving knowledge of Jesus. Jesus will set up his kingdom when God decides that his timing is okay. In the meantime, we are to be his disciples and obedient to him. We are his church, and we better have a clear vision of what God has called us to do. Distraction may lead us to a place where we never thought that we would be. As a disciple of Jesus, we understand God's plan and be willing to follow that plan instead of our plan. And Peter wasn't there. Peter wasn't there yet. Are we? Are we at that place where we're willing to follow that plan, whatever that may look like? This led to Peter being unprepared when things didn't go as planned. Let's look at John chapter 18, verses 12 through 18 and then 25 through 27. So the Roman cohort and the commander of the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him and led him to Annas first, for he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was high priest that year. Now Caiaphas was the one who had advised the Jews that it was expedient for one man to die on behalf of the people. Simon Peter was following Jesus, and so was another disciple. Now that disciple was known to the high priest and entered with Jesus in the court of the high priest. But Peter was standing at the door outside, so the other disciple, who was known to the high priest, went out and spoke to the doorkeeper and brought him in. Then a slave girl who kept the door said to Peter, "You are not also one of the man's disciples, are you?" He said, "I am not." Now the slaves and the officers standing there, having made a charcoal fire, for it was cold and they were warming themselves, and Peter also was with them, standing and warming themselves. And then drop down to verse 25. Now Simon Peter was standing and warming himself. So they said to him, "Are you not also one of his disciples, are you?" He denied it and said, "I am not." One of the slaves of the high priest, being a relative of the one whose ear Peter cut off, said, "Did I not see you in the garden with him?" And Peter then denied it again, and immediately a rooster crowed. Most of the disciples had ran away. But Peter's still following. He's still following Jesus, although feeling defeated. He was still curious and loyal to Jesus. Another disciple was also following him as well. This one was known to the high priest, and he enters the courtyard of the high priest, and he enables Peter to enter with him. There was a lot of debate as to who this other disciple was, but most likely this was John, the author of the gospel. So John is able to walk in unquestioned, but Peter is forced to stand and wait outside. So John speaks to the doorkeeper, and they led him to the courtyard, and the doorkeeper is a little suspicious of Peter. And the slave girl who kept the door said to Peter, "You are not also one of the man's disciples, are you?" And he says, "I am not." That question that was asked, it was a question that expected a negative answer. And so Peter gave the negative answer. He simply went along, taking the easy way out. "You're not one of them, are you?" "Well, no, I am not one of them." His intention was not to deny Jesus, but he finds himself gradually moving to a place of more temptation and a place of greater sins. All of his boasting was about to catch up to him. All of his boasting, "I'm going to go die for you. Wherever you go, I will go. I'm ready to fight for you. I will do anything for you, Jesus." All of the boasting is coming to a point where it's catching up to him. Now, how many times do we boast? And all the great things we're going to do for God. All the great things we're going to do. And the time comes when we're not prepared. The scene continues. The slaves and the officers are standing at the courtyard warming themselves by the fire. And Peter is with him, and he's keeping warm as well. He's in a strange place. He's with strange people, people he doesn't know very well, and his courage begins to wane. See, back in the safety of the upper room, "I will die for you." His friends are gone. Jesus too. He's standing alone, and it's a difficult thing to do, to stand alone. We've been there. It's easy to say that we'll give all for Jesus when we sit in church. It's easy to say that we're going to do this when we're surrounded by our Christian friends. It's easy when everything in life is going our way, when everything is going exactly the way we think it should. It's easy to do this, but too often in these times, we're not relying on Jesus, we're relying on ourselves. When things are good and we're among God's people and we're doing these things, then we're doing things in our own strength. We're not relying on Him. And we see the danger of pride, and we see the danger of self-sufficiency that we see here in Peter. And we see the power of Satan and the power of temptation. Peter had a willing heart, but he was spiritually unprepared. And the servants, as they're standing here, they're still suspicious of Peter. And so several ask him, a group question, they ask him, "Hey, do you belong to Jesus?" Again, this question expects a negative answer. And again, Peter goes along with them. "Yeah, I'm not he. I'm not one of them." But the third questioner was a little different. The third person who questioned was related to Malchus, the high priest's servant. The one who asked this question was likely in the garden. This one had a special interest in the one who had attacked his relative. And he was pretty sure he recognized Peter, and you were the one that did it. So he asked a tougher question. Expecting an affirmative answer, he says, "I saw you in the garden, didn't I?" And now Peter's in deep, and there's no turning back. And again, he denies Jesus, and the rooster crows, just as Jesus had predicted. We know from the other Gospels that Jesus wasn't very far away, and Jesus turned and looked at Peter. And Peter fled, ran into the night, weeping, a broken man, a man in need of restoration that only Jesus could give. Too often we as Christians follow the example of Peter. We'll follow Jesus as long as the blessings in life are included. We'll get active in ministry as long as we get the recognition that we think we deserve. We'll follow as long as there's no suffering and no pain. And when things get hard, then what? Do we quit? Peter was tempted to do just that. Brokenness before God can lead to a crossroads of a spiritual life. And Peter is at that crossroads. And this morning, we're going to leave Peter right there. We're going to leave Peter right here, a broken man, because that is our challenge today. Peter had to be here in order to be used. Peter had to be here in order to be the leader in the early church. We'll see that restoration happen in our next sermon, because God doesn't leave Peter there. God doesn't leave Peter broken. He raises him back up. But this morning, that's where we're going to leave him. Because Peter saw himself as a strong man. And he could no longer see himself that way. He had utterly failed. But in his failure, Peter gained. He can now be used by God. So consider this morning. As we come to our time of invitation, consider this morning our motives in following Jesus. Let's be sure that we're not missing what Jesus may have, maybe be asking of us. Let's evaluate our motives. Are we seeking God's plan in our lives? Are we truly seeking our own plan? What plan are we seeking? Evaluate our lives. Let's make sure that we're preparing our lives, preparing ourselves for the hard times, so when they come, we can remain faithful. Again, this morning, consider your motives as a disciple of Jesus and what he may be asking of you. Where are you today? Peter, great qualities, a strong man, a man who loved Jesus, but a man who had his own ideas and his own thoughts of what Jesus should do. And Peter had to come to a point where he had a transformed mind to be used by Jesus this morning. Are there things in our life that we need to lay at his feet and allow God to get out of our lives so that we can be used by him? Are we seeking something that he's not? Are we looking for something that Jesus isn't looking for? Are we willing to just submit ourselves to him? To be a disciple, every one of us has to come to a point where we say, right now, complete submission. Right now, it's not about me, it's about who you are. What's our response to him today as we stand together and as we sing?